The podcast network is supported by Neo.org, a social network with a purpose, to transform the world by enabling people to transform themselves, and Tony Kynaston, our first TPN patron. Become a TPN patron or a member of the TPN 500 by visiting tpn.thepodcastnetwork.com.
There's a way, such a better way, today, today. Raise your voice, tell the world there's a better way. Today there's a better way. Ooh, there's a way, such a better way. Today, today. Now raise your voice, tell the world there's a better way. Today there's a better way.
This is Rod Adams, and it's time for Atomic Show number 159. This is being recorded on the 1st of August, 2010, and I have with me three students who were members of the Nuclear Engineering Student Delegation, which took a trip to Washington, D.C. from July 24th to July 29th. The students with me are William Sames, Kevin, what is Kevin's last name? Kevin, what's your last name?
Last name is Rob.
Kevin Rob and Rachel Slabaugh. So how are you all today?
Excellent.
Doing very well. Yes.
So Kevin, tell me a little about yourself.
So I'm a PhD student at the University of Wisconsin, and I did my undergrad at Penn State, and I'm working on thermal hydraulics, looking at accident scenarios. I think that summarizes it.
Okay.
And I joined the NASD this year to get our message out there about nuclear education, and also to learn the inner workings of the government, how all these policies come to be.
I'm Will Sames. I'm a senior nuclear engineering major from Texas A&M University, and right now I'm interning out at Los Alamos doing research in reactor design and fuel cycle work. And I joined the Nuclear Engineering Student Delegation because I think a lot of my colleagues and I share the view that our problems with getting nuclear energy to work, a lot of the most serious problems are political problems. They're not necessarily technical problems.
Hi, I'm Rachel Slabaugh. I'm a graduate student at the University of Wisconsin, and I did my undergrad at Penn State. My research area is transport methods, so I find out where all the neutrons are. And this is actually my second year on the delegation, but I originally got involved because I'm very interested in energy issues, and I see a close tie between engineering and policy, particularly nuclear and energy issues and policy.
Well, since you guys are interested in politics and policy, you couldn't have picked a better city to go to than Washington, D.C. So what did you do during the course of your 1 week in D.C.?
Well, we met with the first day we sort of arrived, everybody on the delegation met one another, and then we spent the entire day on Sunday developing our policy statement. So we pretty much sat in a room all day, decided what we wanted to write about, and wrote it, and all came to consensus. It was a pretty good process. And then for the rest of the week, we met with a variety of agencies and groups that are players in nuclear, as well as our elected officials. Kevin or Will, do you want to talk about who we met with?
Sure. well, I guess we met, like Rachel said, with a number of government agencies and industry advocates. We met with the NEI, the senior VP and the CEO. We also met with OMB, who is in charge of the budget process. Met with the DOE and also ARPA-E within DOE. It's a newer program who looks at researching new exciting technologies for energy. We also met with two commissioners, Greg Jasko and Bill Magwood, and also we met with the fellows from ANS, which are in Washington, D.C.
So what's an ANS fellow there, Kevin?
ANS fellows, they compete for it, and they're appointed to go to Washington, D.C., and represent the ANS, the technical side of the nuclear industry, and to talk with policymakers and give them contacts in terms of how the policymakers can get in contact with technical experts. And I think that's pretty much what they do.
So, William, how many people were part of the delegation?
There were 12 students. There was 3 students from the Massachusetts Institute of Technology. There were 2 students from the University of Wisconsin, 2 students from the University of Purdue, 1 student from Texas A&M, myself, 1 student from the University of Texas. And did I miss anyone, Rachel or Kevin?
2 from Michigan.
Oh, yeah.
Did you say that?
No, I didn't get those.
Okay.
That's all right. They're just Midwesterners. Nobody will miss them. Just teasing. So what kinds of issues are front and center in the minds of the students? What do you think the policymakers need to understand about nuclear energy and your needs as students?
Well, this year we highlighted basically 4 types of areas that affect nuclear engineering education. And those 4 are, I guess, first, we wanted to, right now the funding for nuclear engineering education is being well-funded as opposed to in the past. That's why this delegation formed originally in 1994 when the budget called for eliminating the funding for the reactors, the research reactors on campus. So right now we are pleased with the continuing federal support for engineering education, nuclear engineering education. I guess second is that we wanted to maintain funding for the NRC faculty development program. Right now we've seen in the last 5 or 6 years that I've been a student, the number of students have increased, but the number of faculty have either stayed the same or decreased due to retirements. So there's currently a need throughout the United States in the nuclear engineering programs to increase the number of faculty. One way is through the NRC Faculty Development Program, and also we had the idea of maybe facilitating joint appointments between the DOE, the labs, and at the universities to allow some of the experts to come to universities and help develop faculty or even teach classes. So that was the second point. Third one was for them to continue funding the research reactors. Recently, they've been converting their fuel over from high-enriched uranium to low-enriched uranium. But those conversions are mostly complete, but there's kind of a backlog of infrastructure upgrades that need to be done at these facilities because they're unique facilities that are very hard, if not impossible, to replace once they shut down. So we need continued support to facilitate these infrastructure upgrades.
So let me ask you a question. The money that was spent to convert the reactors from high-enriched uranium to low-enriched uranium, did those conversions add any capabilities or make the reactors any more useful as research, or were they simply just costs that had to be incurred because of the political decision to move away from the HEU?
I think Rachel might be good to take that one.
I'm not sure about each and every case. I think in general, they did not add capability. In fact, I think part of the challenge in converting from high to low enriched fuel is that maintaining the same capability. So I don't know that it added, but I'm not familiar in detail with every case.
Okay. So, I mean, what that would indicate is the budget over the last several years could have been fairly significant, but it's not really doing anything to help improve the ability to educate students on the reactors.
That is correct, to the best of my understanding.
Okay, so tell us a little about the faculty development. One of the things that's been discussed in many circles is that there's essentially a missing generation of nuclear engineers where for a good 10, 15 years there was not much interest in nuclear engineering as a topic area of study, and the programs got pretty small. Are the schools having trouble attracting faculty members?
I think that the schools are experiencing trouble in finding the quality of faculty that they'd like to find. There are applicants out there, but I think that there needs to be programs available to try to attract the best and the brightest into these faculty programs so that we can continue to educate the best and the brightest engineering students. And I think that was one of our ideas with trying to come up with a program to facilitate national lab members, giving them the opportunity to go to all the universities that have nuclear engineering programs around the U.S. Currently, they tend to focus and have more of a teaching relationship within universities within their geographical region, as opposed to branching out and going to universities that are further away.
And I think you're exactly right about the missing generation. There's a good number of older faculty, but there is a missing generation of faculty out there. a lot of the labs have people within that generation, but it's difficult to attract them to change their careers and come to a university. So,
and as a follow-on, so there may be many graduates now, but that's a very recent trend, and sometimes it's difficult for universities to hire brand new graduates, and they're only just starting to become available. So there's that gap. It's a challenge to bridge, and universities are a bit hesitant, and we need to have sort of some knowledge transferability to help get mentor relationships for those very young faculty who are interested.
You know, I'd imagine there's also a real need, as I guess it was Will that mentioned, that the quality cut and the experience level is something that we simply can't ignore. We really want to have the best people imparting knowledge. And maybe there's some need for some sort of rotational ability between various jobs within either the national labs, the industry, and even the regulatory agencies.
Yeah.
What kind of reception did you get when you talked to congressmen?
I think it varied. I think many of us found a lot of I know in many of my meetings, I was basically preaching to the choir. I talked to a bunch of Pennsylvania representatives, and they were all very pro-nuclear. Some senators were a little more middle of the road. I personally didn't encounter actually too much anti-nuclear sentiment out there, but I know others had different experiences.
Texas representatives that I talked to also gave a really warm welcome in terms of supporting nuclear power, and the Texas senators.
I think, we lost Kevin. I know he had at least one meeting with somebody who wasn't very interested in listening to what he had to say, but I think overall people are pretty receptive, and they seem to be aware that if you're serious about kind of any energy future in this country, nuclear is going to be a part of it.
Yes, it is becoming more evident to people that nuclear is an important plays an important role, and that certainly, even if there wasn't growth, the support for quality education is going to be incredibly important, because we've still got 104 reactors that are operating today, and we still have an awful lot of other applications for nuclear technologies and nuclear science.
And I think people were also pretty enthusiastic about the idea of nuclear engineering education, because they recognize that no matter what else you think, we have to support the existing plants. And there are all these other needs. There are medical needs, industrial needs, and so on.
So, Rachel, did you get a chance to provide any sermons while you were in D.C.?
Not while I was in D.C., just a few weeks before that. I guess you've been talking to the author of whatisnuclear.com.
I just happened to come across a link that had you providing a sermon to your church as to why you are so interested in nuclear energy as from a sociological point of view.
Right. That was actually in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, about a month ago, something like that, 2 months ago.
Well, see, it's interesting that, that somebody mentioned preaching to the choir, because a good evangelist knows that you have to preach to the choir, because those are the folks who go out there and spread the word. So it never hurts to continue to share the enthusiasm with people who are already on your side. They may not be quite as enthusiastic as they need to be yet.
That's a good point.
So I know there's an awful lot of legislation that's being bandied about in D.C., and I guess you guys were there. I think it was last week that Senator Reeves, Harry Reid, announced that he was not going to pursue an actual energy bill that included any kind of limitations on carbon. Was that a topic of conversation during the week?
What I heard from energy staffers was that they were basically trying to figure out what was going on in this bill, because it was, nobody knew a whole lot about what was in it ahead of time. And so they were all trying to sort through it all and see what it all meant. But we also kind of got the sense that given the current political climate, nobody really expected much to happen on the energy front before November.
One bill that we did hear a lot about was the energy bill in the Senate by Senator Voinovich, a Republican from Ohio, who we actually, as a delegation, had the opportunity to sit down and talk with. And his bill had a number of pro-nuclear options that would do a lot to strengthen the industry, including relabeling nuclear energy in a technical sense as clean energy, so that it could compete with solar and wind for certain tax credits and incentives that way. And it also did a number of other things for nuclear energy as well.
So how do you feel about that? Do you think that nuclear should be receiving the same kinds of incentives as solar and wind and compete against those, or should it really try to compete against the big boys, coal, oil, and natural gas?
Kevin, since you're back, do you want a chance to chime in on this?
I think right now nuclear is competing against the quote big boys in terms of coal and natural gas. I don't think it really needs per se incentives to make that happen. As we see, there's already applications in. A lot of that's driven, though, by loan guarantees. So I guess that is maybe considered an incentive. But yeah.
I would say that nuclear needs to be given the chance to compete with the big boys on equal ground, though, in the sense that coal needs to take into account the pollutants and the carbon dioxide that it does put into the atmosphere, whereas nuclear power is essentially a non-CO2 emitting source of energy. And there's already the nuclear waste fund to which all utilities that produce nuclear power contribute into to deal with nuclear waste.
I would say that I think it's a good idea to support or to label nuclear as clean or renewable emissions equivalent, so that it could count in clean portfolio standards, because it is a low to zero carbon source, and so it should be able to count when you're looking to make specific portfolio standards. And that's a different kind of competing, I suppose.
Yeah, as a technologist, I guess I'll ask all of you, how do you feel about a quota system for, quote, renewable energy standards? Do you think that there should be a quota established that forces utilities to buy, something that qualifies?
I don't know if a quota system is necessarily the most effective way to do it, but I think that some choice needs to be made to help correct for distortions in the market. For example, capturing the externality of carbon in the market. And if you don't do that through a carbon price, maybe a quota system is a way to go. So I don't know that quotas are necessarily the best, but I do think market corrections are needed.
Do Do you think that burning municipal solid waste should qualify as renewable energy? It does by definition right now, by the way.
I don't think I know enough about it to comment on it.
Yeah, I'm not sure. I know in Wisconsin they do a lot of the bio waste, but that is interesting.
It may be renewable, but I'm not sure if it's helpful for meeting emissions goals per se.
It's not exactly something I'd like to breathe the emissions from.
Right. So, if you get down to it, I mean, whale oil used to be a source of energy, and whales are technically renewable, but I don't know if that's really what we're getting at here.
Yes, that's true. And you know, we also used to burn a lot of wood. If you go to visit the Blue Ridge Mountains, you can find historical evidence that we almost denuded the mountains when we were trying to fill the railroads with enough fuel to move people around. And there's the same thing happened in Great Britain and a few other places where even in a much lower population, burning a lot of wood became unsustainable because trees only grow so fast.
Right.
You can renew them, but how fast can you renew them is the question.
So perhaps the distinction is between renewable and, to use the buzzword, sustainable.
Yeah, I much prefer sustainable. So during your studies, how sustainable have you learned that nuclear energy is? Is there any kind of concern? You all are young. Do you think you're going to have any problem supplying enough uranium during your lifetime?
It's an issue that I've heard brought up a few times. And from what I know, we have 60 to 100 years, depending on how the nuclear market takes off, left of uranium just the way as it is, as we currently, the current reserves and the current mining technologies and the costs. I believe we have about 6,800 years-ish left. But beyond that, I mean, we've demonstrated breeder reactors can work. We can actually make more fuel than we consume. India is going full forward on a thorium fuel cycle, and there's a lot more thorium out there than uranium. So to me, nuclear power is at least in the, not, I want to say short term, but within hundreds of years is a consistent, reliable source of energy in terms of fuel.
And also at Los Alamos, we're currently pursuing some technology. It's called the Dupic cycle, and it's based off of the CANDU style reactors that utilize the heavy water, and you can actually burn used fuel in these reactors, which both reduces the radioactivity of that waste and utilizes it, that waste again after it's been used once in a traditional light water reactor like we operate now in the U.S.
Yeah, so it basically sounds like we're saying maybe if you're doing once through light water, enriched uranium cycles, we only have about 100 years, but there are a lot of different kinds of advanced fuel cycles that are much more sustainable.
And those cycles aren't just some sort of somebody's bright idea that hasn't been tested yet, right?
Right. They've all been pretty well developed in the laboratory, and from what I understand, it's a matter of getting all the pieces up at commercial scale and linking them together, none of which require fundamental breakthroughs in technology.
And other countries are going full steam on this in terms of recycling or reprocessing fuel. There's a number of plants in France that use one-third MOX fuel, which is basically recycled or reprocessed fuel.
Right, that's a mixed oxide fuel that uses plutonium from used nuclear fuel and converts it back into an oxide fuel that, instead of using U-235 as the fissile material, it uses a bunch of isotopes of plutonium, right?
Yes.
Yeah, I was lucky enough to visit the Maalox facility in the south of France this summer. It was quite impressive to see how they line that system up to bring in the plutonium and mix it with uranium powders and create new fuel pellets that look just like regular fuel pellets.
Wow.
I even got to see La Hague, where they actually do the separation from the old used fuel. Pretty interesting trip.
Yeah.
Do they, is that a public, do they allow the public at the tour of the facility, or is it, was that through, I don't know, another way to get a tour?
Well, here's the way that I got a tour for that one, because Arriva is a company that's reaching out to the media, and they include bloggers and podcasters as members of the media. Huh. So they invited a group of five writers, four of whom are nuclear bloggers, and then Gwyneth Cravens was the fifth member. She paid her own way, but I don't know if you all have heard of Gwyneth. She's the author of Power to Save the World, The Truth About Nuclear Energy.
Mm. Yes. I have her book. I haven't read it all yet, but I've heard her speak, and I've heard very good reviews of the book.
Well, you guys are graduate students. You have time to read, you know, fun books.
Yeah.
Right. That's the problem.
It's going to be on my list.
So I guess this is a sort of summer break for you guys. Or are you doing something this summer to further your studies?
I'm still at the university and spending the summer performing research. So it's not so much of a summer break for myself.
Yeah, I'm at Bettis Atomic Power Lab for the summer doing a practicum. And
so you can't tell us what you're doing then?
Can't tell you what I'm doing. Well, actually, I can. I don't do anything confidential at all. But I do methods development, so it's a little less applied. In addition to that, my regular research is a different project. So I've been working on my PhD work in the evenings and weekends, and the delegation. I've had a very busy summer.
Yeah.
Rachel, you've been in D.C. before, haven't you?
Yeah. I go, I guess, every other year for the ANS meetings. And this last year with ANS, I did the Day on the Hill thing where we went up and met with our policymakers. And I actually did NESD, this same delegation, last summer, which was a phenomenal experience. And then that's in July. In November, when I was there for the ANS meeting, I actually kept giving out last year's policy statements, and I had a few more meetings. So I've kind of been doing this a lot.
Yeah, I think I saw you at a very unusual building when you were touring around D.C., a five-sided building.
Oh, right. So last year, I had the opportunity to get a tour of the Pentagon. That was really interesting. They have a lot of hallways.
and a lot of tour guides walking backwards.
Yeah. Yeah, that was neat.
So, Kevin, I hear that you had not a completely positive experience when you visited with your congressmen or senators. Can you want to talk about that?
I think they were all positive. The one representative from Wisconsin, Rachel said, a lot of them was kind of speaking to the choir. A lot of them were pro-nuclear and or were just interested in what we had to say. My meeting with the representative from the local area, from Tammy Baldwin's office, either they were very busy or they were not as interested, but they still listened to what I had to say, and they asked several questions. So I think it was a good meeting, but a lot of the people I met with were all enthusiastic about what we had to say.
Now, right now, Wisconsin has rules against new nuclear plants. Is that correct?
That is correct. We currently have a moratorium against new nuclear power plants until there's I don't know the exact wording, maybe Rachel does, but until there's a solution or a facility open to deal with the spent fuel.
It has to be a federal repository. for the waste. So there has to be, new plant has to be economically viable, and there has to be a federal solution to the waste. Meaning Yucca Mountain, basically.
Did you guys get any opportunity to learn what the Blue Ribbon Commission on Nuclear Waste was up to this summer?
Was that we had hoped to. We were supposed to have a chance to meet with one of the Blue Ribbon Commission staff, but we ended up not being able to have that meeting after all. We heard a little bit that it sounded like what is hopeful to come out of that is perhaps a mechanism to disengage the waste solution from the political process by perhaps creating sort of a government-affiliated corporation that's in charge of dealing with all this, and perhaps not a specific, like, this is the technical solution thou shalt pursue, but a way to disengage from the political process so that that choice isn't a football and subject to appropriations anymore.
But so we'll That was just one idea that someone brought up could be a result of the Blue Ribbon Commission.
We don't really know.
So I'm looking at your policy statement, and it looks like there's also something about international collaboration. Can you explain what it is that the students think the government should be doing with facilitating international collaboration?
Sure.
Will, do you want to take this one
I'll take this one. I think in general, the delegation had a concern that a lot of other countries are taking the lead in nuclear technology, and that we need to be exposing our students in universities to international opportunities and what other countries are doing, so that in the increasing international globalized business world, our students can compete, and then American companies can compete in the future. And in particular, there was a program by Brookhaven National Lab that was sending students to intern over at the IAEA, and funding for that program, I believe, was cut. And so that was just an example of one of the international opportunities that our students had in the past that has gotten cut recently. And then we also, there was a concern with our students that nuclear engineering programs around the country, none to our knowledge, had the opportunity to do a nuclear engineering study abroad and actually go abroad, take nuclear engineering courses abroad, and then come back to the university from which they left, you know, after a semester abroad or a year abroad. And I think that all the other programs around at least Texas A&M are strongly encouraging these programs, and there's a lot of nuclear engineering students that are interested and I think would benefit a lot from it. But the opportunity is just not there to go and take these courses elsewhere. And I think that by doing that, we would train our students and help them develop international contacts. And so then it would make the United States more competitive in the future in the nuclear industry.
Is that a funding issue, a accreditation issue, or a combination of that?
I think it's a combination.
I think the internships or the exchange programs outside of universities going away, it's probably a funding issue. And at the specific university, it could be accreditation, or it could be that, you know, interest in this is really pretty new because, you know, 15 years ago there weren't any students, and it's recent that international engagement has become such a sort of pressing need in the nuclear community. And so I think it perhaps just hasn't come up. And one thing I'd like to add is that many, many other countries or organizations have partially funded abroad internships, and so it could be quite inexpensive to just supplement what's available abroad. Like an internship at the IAEA, they would fund part of it, and so funding from a federal standpoint wouldn't cost a whole lot.
So were any of the students on the delegation studying Chinese, Korean, or Japanese?
No.
Yeah, not to my knowledge.
Not to my knowledge either. I do know a student at Texas A&M that's taking some Japanese on the side, though.
Yeah, maybe I should have added French on that list as well. That seems to be the languages that you really need. Maybe right. Russian, too. I don't know. there's an awful lot of development happening in nuclear technologies that I think that we're isolated from because we can't read the literature.
Right. I know of another student at A&M that's, I believe, maybe minoring in French. And I believe, to my knowledge, he took a program to study abroad in France, but it was a language-based kind of study abroad program. Whereas if he had been able to go on there on a technical nuclear engineering one, I'm sure he would have taken that opportunity.
Yeah, sometimes it's also a little challenging to study a language from a technical basis compared to studying it for conversational purposes.
Right.
Yeah. All right. So let's see. Looking to see if there's anything else that I wanted to cover. Have you guys got any particular topics you want to share? Anything that really stood out for you or words of encouragement for other people that might be interested in this nuclear engineering student delegation opportunities?
Yes. If you're interested in the delegation, there is one every year. You should definitely apply. We need good people. One thing, if you're interested in getting involved, I heard from many delegates this year that it didn't seem so hard to get up there and get involved and share your opinion. They're your elected officials, and you have the right to share your input with them.
And if you want to be involved, applications are in the spring and are found at nesd.org.
That's a November Echo Sierra Delta, right?
Yes.
And I guess I'd add that all three of us students are pursuing something technical in school. But this experience, to me, showed how much, while there is some technical challenges with nuclear, there's a lot of political challenges. And just being aware of the policies, the policymakers, being engaged can have a large impact on the nuclear industry. So I thought that was pretty interesting. I encourage other nuclear engineering students to get out there, find out what kind of policy, what kind of legislation is going on, and be involved, because it's their future industry, and it affects everyone. So
that brings up an interesting point. How many of you are aware of nuclear engineering students who take policy type courses, either political science or policy studies or those kinds of things? Because as you said, that's really an important part of being a nuclear technologist these days, is understanding how that all impacts what you do on a technical basis.
To my knowledge, there's not too many students or too much curriculum offered. I know MIT has a program. There's some limited classes offered at different schools. But there is maybe not a lack, but there is a kind of a lack of this type of curriculum, I think, at the university level.
I think that's starting to change, though. For example, many students at Wisconsin get a certificate in energy analysis and policy. I'm pursuing an energy analysis and policy certificate. And programs like that are starting to become more and more available around the country. And so it's maybe not nuclear specific, but I think there's a lot of technology policy pairing that's starting to become a lot more prevalent.
And at Texas A&M, there's the Nuclear Security and Science Policy Institute, NSSPI. And at that institute, a lot of those students take courses that are kind of co-listed with the Bush School of Political Science at Texas A&M. And those students have a focus in safeguards and nonproliferation policy issues.
In that course of study, is there some cross-pollination? Are there some folks who actually focus more on the policy side but are learning more about technology as well?
There's actually a number of students that are part of that group from the Bush School of Political Science at A&M that are actually then taking some of the more technical nuclear classes and doing more research related to that area and coming at it from strictly the policy side with a background in political science.
Yeah, it's very interesting. This past week I attended two different sessions in D.C. that were mainly about policy, both about nuclear non-proliferation policy studies and discussions. And I was a little bit lonely because I think I was one of the few technical folks in one crowd that had a couple hundred people in it. All right. So I appreciate your time, and I also appreciate the fact that you all took a week out of your summer and went to the national capital and tried to share some information and learn a little bit about how the I just finished 9 years of working in D.C., so I call it the sausage factory, how the sausage factory works. Sometimes it's not exactly reassuring about how it works, but it's important to know.
I think you're right.
All right. Thank you all very much, and good luck to you the rest of the summer. Keep up with your studies and keep in touch. Be interested to see how you proceed forward in your careers and see how you are influencing future policies and making sure that we have plenty of clean energy for the foreseeable future.
Thank you.
Thanks very much for your time, Rod, as well.
Yes.
All right. Bye.
Bye-bye.
I hope you all enjoyed that. It was fun talking to the students. Always interested to hear how people who are just starting out in their careers are doing. I also wanted to mention to you an opportunity I wrote about on Atomic Insights to support a video project that will have two high school students going around the country and interviewing four nuclear pioneers, including Ted Rockwell, Charles Till, Len Koch, and Robert Shunter. The four pioneers helped the two high school students prepare for a series of competitive debates on what the government policy should do to improve the environment in the U.S., and their position was that supporting nuclear would be a good way to improve the environment. So I want to make sure that video project turns out to be a high-quality effort that is valuable over a long time. It's really important to get the thoughts and knowledge of these pioneers documented and recorded for posterity. So if you want to help that project, please go over to Atomic Insights. I'll provide the link on the blog here, but the post on Atomic Insights was dated the 30th of July. If you're interested in supporting, send me an email to rod_adams@atomicinsights.com, and I'll send you the information on how to support it, how to send a check, and who to send it to. Thank you all for your attention, and hope you come back next week. Bye.
There's a way, such a better way. Today, today. Raise your voice, tell the world there's a better way. Today, there's a better way. Ooh, there's a way, such a better way. Today, today. Now raise your voice, tell the world there's a better way. The way is the Adams way.
You're listening to the Podcast Network. Listen, learn, evolve.